Episode 49, NFL Draft Podcast.
What's up, Rob?
How you doing, Stan?
Chilling.
We're going to do another brisket episode. We've been pretty good. I know I've been saying this every week.
We're going to jinx ourselves at some point.
This is going to be another nice, quick one. We've done a preview of all the positions, other than special teams, because, come on.
Right. We're not going to break down kickers and punters?
Not breaking down kickers and punters today.
Gunners, maybe? No?
All that hard work in the film room you've done, all for naught
all for
now.
Nothing.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a few of the favorite players we talked about, maybe talk about a little bit more, and we're going to do NFL player comps for some of these players.
Okay.
I prepared a few, and then we'll see
I've got some names.
How it goes from there. Then we're going to come back at the end with a nice quick August movie big board, a favorite event of ours, as always.
Yep.
And we're going to get you out of here pretty quick.
All right.
That's our promise.
Scout's honor.
All right.
Were you a scout?
What?
Were you like a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout?
No. You?
For like 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, I was a Cub Scout for like 3 weeks. I couldn't do it. Saturday mornings were cartoon time. I'm not tying knots out here, right?
I was watching college football on Saturday mornings since I was 2 and a half.
I get it.
No, that's not true.
What was that, 1990?
That's not true. I was born in 1990.
That was close. I knew it. All right. Okay, so.
I have a friend who's a Ohio State fan, and he says the only reason is because he wasn't allowed to watch cartoons. So when he was young, the only games on in the morning on Saturdays were, like, it was always Ohio State was the national game.
Yeah.
He became an Ohio State fan. And I finally realized how he became so terrible growing up.
That makes sense. No cartoons and Ohio State football?
Yeah.
Tell him he owes me a championship. Thank you.
All right, so we're gonna go through, you know, some of the top players at the positions. I wanted to try to see if we can get some player comps for them. It's always a fun exercise. I'm not gonna take it too seriously because it really doesn't mean that much, and especially doesn't mean that much a year ahead of time. And then we're also gonna just run through the entire Miami Hurricanes roster, and Stan's gonna give you
one by
Miami
one.
Legend. Like, they're all gonna either be compared to Ed Reed or Sean Taylor or Michael Irvin or Kellen Winslow.
Yes.
Jeremy Shockey, every single one of them,
every
regardless
single one
of position, they're all going to be Warren Sapp.
Vinny Testaverde,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
All right, so let's start off with the one that's going to be crazy, and if anybody bothers to respond to this podcast, this is going to be the one that they yell at me about. Josh Allen, my number one quarterback, my number one overall player heading into the year, guy I love. I have two comparisons.
I'm excited.
It falls somewhere in the middle, but I'm going to let you ruminate over the first name I have next to his, Aaron Rodgers.
I see it. I understand why you say that.
Now, I'm glad that you reacted in such a calm way, because I guess you knew it was coming. So I have the two names
I've heard you say before.
The two, the two names I have next to him are Aaron Rodgers and Jay Cutler. Okay?
The two opposite spectrum.
No, but like they kind of have the same skill set.
Okay.
It's the skill set is very similar.
The talent level is different.
Not even what they've done with their talent to maximize their talent has gone in two very different directions.
Right.
But I think Josh Allen, you're talking about the athleticism, the size. He's 6'5", 240.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that athleticism. Yeah, maybe he's not going to beat Lamar Jackson in a race, but you pick up first downs, he can move around in the pocket, he's big, he can shake off a tackle, and he can make plays with his legs. You've got to remember, Jay Cutler maybe didn't do it as much recently in the Bears, but younger when he was with the Broncos, he can move. I mean, he came out of the option offense in Vanderbilt. And the arm talent is so on a level by itself that, it's noteworthy. When you think of the strongest arm in the NFL, you probably think of Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jay Cutler wasn't using his arm strength to throw directly to the other team, you might also throw him in the mix.
No, yeah, I see that.
And Josh Allen's there. Listen, like, he's the number one quarterback on my list. I would be very surprised if he's ever as good as Aaron Rodgers is.
If he's halfway between the two.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
I would give the number one pick for halfway between Jay Cutler and Aaron Rodgers, and that's why he's listed there.
You're at best a potential Hall of Famer, at worst a Pro Bowler. A Pro Bowler who can't get a job 10 years into his career.
I'm happy we were able to do that calmly. I knew I was in trouble when I wrote down Aaron Rodgers, but I really couldn't work my rant. Like, I feel like saying that he was somewhere between Stafford and Cutler, or between Flacco and Cutler, was selling him short a little bit.
I hear
he's
you.
A little bit more upside than a mitigated version of those two guys. All right, I'm sticking with quarterbacks. Sam Darnold. The popular one is Philip Rivers. I totally see it. Most of it comes because of the throwing motion is weird. Not the same as Philip Rivers, but whenever you get a weird throwing motion, who's the first quarterback you think of that's had success with that? And Rivers.
Yeah. Or the opposite direction, who hasn't had success with this, Tim Tebow. But, you know, that's totally different.
I thought about putting Tim Tebow up here. But, and the reason is, it's not because of the throwing motion. It's because of the leadership, of the intangibles, of, he kind of has all, he's like a Tebow, if Tebow had, you know, the requisite arm strength to play in the NFL, and the accuracy. I put, and going from Tebow, to try to cater off of the, he's got the Rivers with the throwing motion, he's kind of got that moxie as a leader, but he's kind of also got that Andrew Luck quality to him, and it's more of, it's not really Andrew Luck's process for the game, which I think is unparalleled. Like, he processes the game as a young player on a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning level, even though he's a little bit more of a gunslinger than those guys ever were. And it's not necessarily athleticism. I think Andrew Luck was probably a better athlete than Darnold. But just in terms of the leadership, the intangibles, the way he carries himself like he's that first pick. And to be honest, I don't know that there's been a quarterback that I've seen in my time that has distributed the leadership and the kind of like, I'm the number one pick, even though I just finished my freshman year, and whether I come out this year or next year or the year after that, I'm eventually going to be that number one quarterback. It's not really a playing style comparison as much as it is an intangible comparison.
You know what's funny? I think it's a USC thing. I really do believe that it's a, like, I feel like, I just, there's been a few USC quarterbacks that have come out and have had that sort of attitude. Maybe not John David Booty, but like, Carson Palmer had that.
Yeah.
Leinart had that. Sanchez had that. Like, but even Barkley had that. Like, all these guys kind of, they were drafted at different spots, they all kind of had that attitude, and it's not surprising that Sam Darnold has it too.
I will say the difference there is that, and it's great that you brought up those guys, not Palmer as much, but Mark Sanchez, Matt Barkley, Matt Leinart, which is weird saying those names three in a row, They were a lot more laid back.
Mm-hmm.
Darnold's kind of more of like a quiet intensity.
Yeah.
But that attitude that he carries himself, like he's the best. But as of right now, where Darnold is, he looks a little hyper-focused. Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, Matt Barkley, call him a lot of things. You wouldn't call him hyper-focused.
That's true.
But
it was a confidence that they had.
He's got it too, right.
Yeah.
And he's kind of having that thrust upon him.
Yeah.
And, of course, the third quarterback in this group is Josh Rosen. For him, I kind of got, Josh Rosen is about as textbook as it comes in terms of playing style.
Right.
You talk about the drop back. Everything is picture perfect, you know, almost erring towards robotic. And the results have been good, not great. Reminds me a lot of Carson Palmer.
Okay.
Reminds me a lot of Matt Ryan. Yes, they have all the talent in the world, but they might have been missing a little bit of that it factor, where they kind of just was like, he's got arm strength, check. He checks off every box, but I don't know if he goes above and beyond right now. And it's going to take the right system, the right coaches in the NFL to bring him to the next level.
As with
Carson
Matt Ryan,
Palmer, right. And Matt Ryan, the same thing. Like, yep, he can hit a certain level on his own, but he needs a great play caller, a great coach to kind of get the most out of him. I think that Josh Rosen has a... If Josh Allen is my number one quarterback and Darnold's my number two, Rosen's my number three, if you're just taking those guys, maybe I'll give a 40% chance that Allen's the best quarterback of the group, a 32% chance that it's Darnold, 28% that it's Rosen. I think I did the math right there. I think it's pretty close. I think we're probably even closer than that. I think that if Rosen gets paired up with the right coach and coordinator, that he could blow them both away in terms of what he could do in the NFL. I think that Carson Palmer and Matt Ryan, in that sense, remind me of him.
I was going to say Sage Rosenfels. That was the comparison I was going to make to Rosen.
Okay. Shots fired. That's going to get me off. Anybody who was thinking, was sitting here waiting for the podcast to end to type me a mean email about Aaron Rodgers is now going to type you a mean email.
Right.
About.
But for different reasons.
About Sage Rosenfels.
Yeah, yeah.
That's rough, man.
Jay Fiedler? I don't know, man. Whew. All right. There's a quarterback that I do want your comparison. Right. Mason Rudolph.
Mason Rudolph. I was thinking, this one was, I decided not to do the comp on him because it was just a little bit difficult.
Because I was watching, before we started this, I was kind of watching, just to kind of look and see who he reminds me of. I can't, is it wrong to say Brendan Whedon? Like, I mean, just.
Yes, that's gum. I mean.
He's got a really strong arm. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't take snaps under center. I don't know. He's big. He's about 6'5". He's not as stout as Darnold or Josh Allen, but he's tall. He's got a very strong arm. I'm trying to think of somebody he might remind me of, but I don't know. You got anybody?
Maybe he's a little bit like Flacco.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a guy who's stands strong in the pocket.
Yeah.
He wants to go deep. Like Winston and Roethlisberger came to mind, but I think that they are a little bit more dynamic.
I was going to say Roethlisberger, Roethlisberger tends to, you know, Roethlisberger is a bigger dude, obviously. He's just a bigger guy, bigger man, and just like you said, a little more mobile. Mason Rudolph doesn't move that much, but you know when he does, he can make a play out of the pocket, on the run.
I think Flacco's probably as good as it's going to get from a comparison in terms of current NFL players.
Which honestly, if that's his trajectory, that's not that bad.
That's pretty bad.
Is it?
I think so.
Guy takes you to the Super Bowl, gets hot at the right time.
I want to discuss. Anybody can get hot at the right time, but
not anybody. You think there's anybody on the Jets roster that can get hit at the right time?
Stand corrected. All right. Do you have anybody for the running backs? Saquon Barkley. This was a really tough one for me because he's such a do-it-all guy.
Yeah. You know, this might be bad, but he kind of reminds me of Doug Martin a little bit.
All right. I know. It totally does. It's probably better than mine. It's definitely better. I'm going to steal it. I think it's...
Who are you
going
to say?
I had two names. I had Ezekiel Elliott there, but it was more of the mix. Like, he's the Ezekiel Elliott prototype, but the mix is LeSean McCoy. He's got the thick body, but he's got those LeSean McCoy, like, the vision, the quickness, the suddenness. But I like Doug Martin, LeSean McCoy mix.
Yes. He's a little slighter than Doug Martin is. But Doug Martin's
But he's bigger than McCoy. He's not like that. That's why I didn't want to leave McCoy there alone. You know, he's a good receiver. He's not David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell. I think that was too high praise. But he's a guy I really like.
Yeah.
I love it if he fell right in there somewhere. I'm going to put LeSean McCoy over Doug Martin. Somewhere,
fine.
You know, in the LeSean McCoy, Doug Martin. And the combination actually might put him ahead of those two guys as opposed to, like when I said Josh Allen is between Rodgers and Cutler, it means he's less than Rodgers, more than Cutler.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley might be more than Doug Martin, more than McCoy, but a combination of their skills.
Right.
Darius Geis, the other big running back in this class.
Okay, so the easy one to say.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about, because he's tall. He's about 6'4", right?
No. Geis is 5'11". He's small.
Who am I thinking?
Fournette. You're thinking of, crap.
There's a 6'4 running back that I'm thinking of. I don't remember. Doesn't matter. All right,
Bo Scarborough? Kind of,
maybe.
He's like 6'3 and a half.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
All right, for me, Darius Geis, and it's purely on his running style here. Again, I did the two names here. Yeah. I kind of did this for a while, and then I dropped it completely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really apt for the running backs because the style is so important. He's got a lot of Marshawn Lynch in him. He runs so violently and so angrily.
Yeah.
but
looks for contact.
Looks for contact. He's not quite as probably dynamic as Lynch is, but maybe I'm selling him short if I'm by saying that, because you know Lynch had his struggles in the NFL too. I think the other guy I would put in there is Tevin Coleman. Yeah. Tevin Coleman with the Falcons, a guy. Geis eats up yards like Coleman does. He closes. You always think of it a closing speed when it comes to defenders, and mm-hmm. I've said used this point before to describe Geis. He's got closing speed on defenders. Like a linebacker is in the hole, and it looks like the linebacker is going to meet him halfway. If they're 8 yards apart, you think they're going to meet at about 4, and somehow they meet at 6, because even if Geis doesn't seem like he's got that speed, he just gets to where he needs to get so fast, and he gets there with a head of steam, and then he might drag a guy a couple of yards. It's something that I really loved about Coleman. Coleman, I loved him coming out of Indiana. He never really made anybody miss, never really made a cut. He kind of looked like he was running blind sometimes, but when you run hard enough in one direction, he plays to his strength. The third guy, a guy we liked a lot last year, we thought he was a declare, Nick Chubb, is another guy I wanted to talk about.
It's hard for me not to compare him to the other Georgia running backs.
Trying to avoid that, I didn't want to compare him to Le'Veon Bell because he doesn't catch the ball quite like that.
Right.
But he runs a lot like Le'Veon Bell. He's the most patient runner I've scouted, including Le'Veon Bell, who was fat at Michigan State, and therefore I thought he was going to be terrible. Came to the Steelers, and all of a sudden he's not fat anymore.
Speeds up your metabolism. I don't know if you know that. Science.
So he runs like Le'Veon Bell, but he's got the athletic profile of Melvin Gordon. In terms of the power, the speed, the way he goes, Melvin Gordon, not quite as patient as Chubb is in the backfield. So that's why Le'Veon Bell is just the stand-in for anybody who exhibits any patience, which is kind of a detriment to Le'Veon Bell because nobody has that type of patience. But I couldn't come up with a good second name. So he's really Melvin Gordon, but he's a little bit more patient. And I think that he'll be able to set up his blockers a little bit better. Of course, he's got similar injury histories, so that might not work out for him.
Okay. I'm trying to think of other running backs. Do you have any more?
I picked top three. You can go Myles Gaskin, Bo Scarborough, Royce Freeman. You can keep going forever and ever. Wide receivers. I took 4 wide receivers here. And I no longer did the two names.
Okay.
My number one receiver we discussed is Deion Kane. Guy has a chance to be Brandon Cooks to me. I don't know if he's as fast. Brandon Cooks was like a 4.35 guy, but you know, not totally tall, but blazing speed, doesn't rely on getting deep because he can get deep on you, he can go under you. He's not John Ross. He's not a one-trick pony. I'm not saying that he's better than John Ross because of that. When your one-trick is that good, that's great. But I think he's the kind of guy you could see just early in his career in the right system, just putting up those 90-catch, 1,100-yard, you know, 5-touchdown seasons with some upside. Calvin Ridley, this is your boy. This was a tough one. I don't know if you had one because I want to stay away from the Amari Cooper comparison. Let me hear what you had.
Michael Thomas.
Wow, that's a good one.
I see a lot of Michael Thomas in him. I think because, you know, at Alabama, he's not going to do what Michael Thomas does, but I see that skill set. He's got the similar size.
Same thing. Michael Thomas didn't do it at Ohio State. Right. He needed too much ball to share.
But too I many think
people share the ball with.
I think.
Yeah, that's a good one. I really like that one.
From what I remember, his freshman year,
he doesn't have the same size profile as Martavis Bryant, but I did put it Martavis Bryant. I think he's got some real speed to get deep, but I would steal yours. I would take Michael Thomas. That's a great comp. Cortland Sutton, Vincent Jackson to me.
That's a good one.
Vincent Jackson. I think that, and it's the same thing with Mike Williams. He's not quite your Mike Evans, like, go up, get the ball, do everything
but he can
with a little speed. I don't think he's quite at that level, but I think Vincent Jackson is, like, he's a reliable guy. He's to make plays on the ball. He could use his height to his advantage. I think Mike Evans is a little bit more explosive. I don't think that Mike Williams is that good. I don't think Cortland Sutton. I don't think either of these players will ever be Mike Evans. Mike Evans led the league in targets this past year.
Like, he was able to
get deep on people. 173 or so, 172.
Yeah.
But, you know, good players, and they know how to use their height. And Christian Kirk is another one of your guys that you really like.
Yeah.
I have a weird one because I think that Christian Kirk might be a 4.4 guy.
Okay.
And I picked a 4.7 guy.
Who'd you go with?
Jarvis Landry.
Okay.
Jarvis Landry. I think that Christian Kirk in the slot on the outside get him the ball, he'll make plays with it in his hands. He's going to break tackles. Jarvis Landry never looks like he's running a 4.7 to me.
No, yeah.
So I don't want Christian Kirk's people to be offended, but I think that Kirk, get the ball in his hands, he's going to make plays. I think he's tough as nails. I think he's electric with the football.
I was watching some of his highlights, and he looks like a guy, a kind of guy that can just get to a spot.
Yep.
And that reminds me a lot of Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard is the kind of guy who's going to run a clean route. He's going to get to a spot. And he's going to get the ball to him.
See, Shepard was a iffy route runner.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know what? I see it. Like, because he has the same kind of after the catch ability. Yeah. Shepard really had it. Shepard, you're right. Shepard didn't get to a spot and beat a guy to a spot. I think Kirk actually is a little bit more polished.
Right.
And I think that he probably should be better than Shepard. All right. I didn't do any tight ends. Is that all right with you?
That's fine.
Offensive tackles. I didn't want to take too long on the offensive linemen because, you know, it's hard to compare, like, the styles. Even looking at them, like, it's hard for me to figure out.
They tend to look similar sometimes.
They tend to look similar. I haven't done a ton of work on all of the offensive tackles, but I figured I'm going to dump some high praise on two guys. Connor Williams. Two names again. I think he's got similar athletic traits to Tyron Smith.
Okay, yeah.
I think he's got similar steadiness to Andrew Whitworth.
I see that.
Granted, I now just named you two of the four best offensive tackles in the NFL.
Hey, man, high praise.
All right, I'm in on Connor Williams at this point. I think that's obvious. I also did McGlinchey. I think McGlinchey was easier. I think Connor Williams, I just tended to overshoot, obviously, with Tyron Smith and Andrew Whitworth. McGlinchey, I think I have a better feel for him. And I think he's somewhere between Brandon Albert, who had a great career, it's probably on the downside now, Brandon Albert and Donald Penn, who's kind of the opposite, who was a journeyman for a long time, who's now developed into one of the steadier offensive left tackles in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the steadiness and the ability to do both, he's a really good run blocker who's becoming better as a pass blocker every year. I think that, for me, that's McGlinchey.
Okay.
So you can't say I didn't give the offensive line any love, right? That's basically the only reason
show love to the offensive linemen.
All right. I also skipped interior defensive linemen.
That's fine.
It's tough. If they're not going to stick out, like, yeah, Christian Wilkins, maybe he's like Gerald McCoy type, but it's a difficult thing to stick out.
It's hard to make those comparisons because, you know, even Gerald McCoy, like, you know, yeah, he was very good in college, but like, he's dominant.
Yeah,
like it's hard to find those guys in college.
Yeah, and it's tough because a lot of that is scheme dependent.
That's true. Yeah,
and a lot of that is what they're allowed to do. Like Christian Wilkins is only allowed to do so much in that Clemson offense because it's what he's asked to do. So it was hard. Pass rusher, and some of the corners and safeties in this draft were hard, not because it's tremendously difficult normally, but because the top guys at those positions are kind of not like guys we've seen recently.
Yeah.
Arden Key. The instinct is to say Leonard Floyd because they look similar, but now you have Arden Key who's hyper-productive and hyper-polished,
yeah,
almost like Joey Bosa, but he doesn't look anything like Joey Bosa, and that is not a white joke.
Wouldn't you say Arden Key is like a Javon Curse?
Maybe.
Just like slight, but fast. And
Curse, I didn't get to see Curse in college, so it kind of just pushes him too far out of my mind.
I just dated myself. I just show how old I am.
Yeah,
you
did.
All right, cool.
I put Terrell Suggs for him.
Okay.
I think Terrell Suggs at Arizona. Was it Arizona or Arizona State?
Arizona State.
Yep. Bevy of pass rush moves, could play linebacker, could play defensive end. Suggs has the mean streak that I'm hoping Key has, but
Could you imagine if he did? Jeez.
I see similarities. I didn't really have, you know, great comps for everybody, but I did like Harold Landry as a Marcus Golden type.
Yeah, okay. I see that.
They're similar in size and stature, both about 6'3", 250 to 260. They don't really have that length that you expect. I doubt that Harold Landry would have a long career as a defensive end because it takes a lot more than what his skill set currently has. Not saying he can't do it, but I think that you wouldn't see him lining up there and setting the edge and doing playing the run from that spot, but he's explosive coming off the edge, and I don't imagine he'll test well, but neither did Marcus Golden, and Marcus Golden turned out a hell of a player. Linebacker, we only really talked about one linebacker this year when we did linebackers, and that was Malik Jefferson, and obviously he has the Jalen Smith comp, but I haven't seen Jalen Smith play in the NFL. So I gave him Quan Alexander, which probably hurts me for having him as a top 10 pick. I love Quan Alexander. He's one of the best linebackers in the league. But if you're going to be a top 10 pick, you probably wish you would have got a comp for Bobby Wagner or Luke Kuechly or Levante David. And I don't think Malik Jefferson really is that type of polished player.
You know who?
Say
playing against the run.
Okay.
And if he's healthy, he kind of reminds me of DeAndre Levy. All
right.
But you know, like DeAndre Levy plays the pass a lot better.
Yeah, but Malik Jefferson will get there. Malik Jefferson, he's got a lot to grow. He's another guy that I'm starting to come around on, maybe sticking around an extra year in college.
I like him.
But I'm going to skip right to corners now. This was a tough one. Minka Fitzpatrick.
He doesn't remind me of anybody. I'm sorry. He doesn't remind me of anybody. He's his own person.
It took me a while, but I came up with it.
All right.
He reminds me of Chris Harris. That is the only guy who I could get who's as smooth as him. Chris Harris, do not underrate Chris Harris.
He's been phenomenal.
A lot of time in the slot. He could play corner. You can imagine Chris Harris playing a lot of safety if he had to. And just blankets guys. I think it's on point.
I'm looking for the fluidity that.
I think that Chris Harris is the only one in the only player in the NFL that has that fluidity without having the outsized athleticism of Patrick Peterson. Tavares McFadden. I want to do Xavier Rhodes, but I'm not doing a same school comparison.
They're
a little different. Xavier Rhodes is a little tougher, and I know he kind of groomed into that toughness in
the NFL. Yeah, he wasn't always like that,
He wasn't always like that, so it's not going to kill McFadden if he can't get there. I had Josh Norman for McFadden.
Really?
And it's kind of just the way that he uses his length, he uses his body, he baits people into making throws, and he gets beat. And Josh Norman, get beat. And if Josh Norman was in man coverage all the time, probably wouldn't be it. I was thinking, how good would... I don't think McFadden will be there for the Panthers in the second round, assuming the Panthers... I mean, if the Panthers do really well and have like a late 20s pick, maybe, but they're really not looking for corners in round one, usually. Hey, new GM, you never know.
It's true. That's
true. But, I mean, McFadden would kind of fill that hole that Josh Norman left. That I imagine he would have done it pretty well. I think that he just kind of fits in that role. And I had one for Iman Marshall. I went back to the Broncos. I think Iman Marshall has a little bit of Aqib Talib in him.
Yes.
Especially young Aqib Talib out of Kansas. Aqib was like really great. Still hit or miss, learning the ropes, and I think Iman Marshall has a long way to learn the ropes, but listen, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Iman Marshall. Obviously I'm a big Aqib Talib guy.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple safeties. Derwin James. Derwin James is a comp for Derwin James at this point.
Yeah.
But
the closest I was going to say, Deion Buchanan.
See, I think that you're selling short, and I think it's not a you problem. It's a Derwin James problem. I think that Cam Chancellor was like a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Derwin James is the Cam Chancellor that's a first-round pick. With the first-round pick talent, the first-round pick speed, the first-round pick ability, the first-round pick three-cone drill, it's really more of a body type, but it's also...
He's not as lanky.
Who? They kind of are.
Because
Chancellor put on some weight, but...
That's probably, I just, when I see Cam Chancellor, I just see somebody... Like, he does...
He's intimidating.
I think he's supposed to be like 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah,
he's a little taller. But he plays like he's like 6'5".
Yeah.
He just looks like he's much more intimidating. Not that Derwin James isn't.
But I think that's the thing. I think that Derwin James comes up, he hits that... Hits Demaryius Thomas over the middle of the first play of the Super Bowl and sets the tone for the game.
Yeah.
I think he has that, and I think he has the chance to kind of hold up in coverage a little better. Cam Chancellor, I mean, the Patriots picked on Cam Chancellor in that second Super Bowl. He could be had in coverage. I think that James has a chance to be a lot better covered in the slot. And I wanted to give Quinn Blanding a nice positive spin since, he kind of took a hit. For us, especially you kind of jumped off the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Rashad Jones, Miami.
Okay.
Big tackler. Yeah. Always in the mix. Can play free safety, but still plays free safety with a strong safety mentality coming down on the run. Not necessarily hitting in the passing game. Like, he's not a big hitter like Carl Joseph who would annihilate a receiver.
Yeah.
But a really great tackler, really great instincts, and the athleticism to play free safety. And hopefully Quinn Blanding gets overpaid one day, since he apparently is like almost like a close friend of mine after talking about him so long.
Kickers and punters?
Yes, the kickers are exactly like all the other kickers.
Gotcha.
And the punters are exactly like all the other punters, except Marquette King?
Marquette King, yeah.
And I don't know why I almost forgot his name.
Because he's a punter.
Yeah, I guess so. I like him, though.
He is cool.
Him and the guy from the Bills are my favorite. Not currently. Like
a oh, okay. Guy. What was it?
Like 90 speed and Madden.
Lindley?
No, probably not. Brian Moorman.
Brian, who got annihilated in the Pro Bowl
by
Sean Taylor, RIP, 26.
Well, those are some player comps. That was just fun. I always like doing it. Any Miami guys? Chad Thomas.
Bruce Smith.
I was about to yell the receiver's name, and you just got me.
Chad Thomas.
No, that's all right.
I don't know, man.
Bruce Smith. Got it.
Yeah.
We're going to come back.
200 sacks.
We're going to come back with
Lock our it in.
August movie big board. All right, August movie big board. August is coming.
It's around the corner.
I know we don't have really the big blockbuster movies to fill the top of this list here.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, there was surprising depth in August.
I was going to say the same. There's a lot
of movies that I'm probably would never going to see, but wouldn't be upset if I had to. And normally, when we do these things, there's like, especially in the summer when all of the Marvel movies are out and then there's nothing else after them.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually somewhere between 3 and 7 movies that if I had to actually watch, I would be really upset with.
I agree. There, like I said, there's some fast risers up here. There's some Solomon Thomases.
All right. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
All right. You're going to go 10 through 6. And I will do the same, and then we'll volley back and forth.
Tomorrow. All right. Number 10, yep. Kidnap.
All right. I got it on my list.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. Yeah. Number 9. Logan Lucky.
Also on my list.
All right, we'll get to that. Number 8, Pilgrimage.
All right, you can talk about that one, because you ain't going to see that crap on my list.
Yeah, okay, so I like the cast.
Tom Holland?
Tom Holland, John Bernthal from The Walking Dead and from Punisher.
Was he actually Punisher?
Yeah,
Tom James is Punisher.
No, he's Punisher on the Daredevil series.
Netflix.
Gotcha. So in the 13th century, Irish monks embarked on a reluctant pilgrimage to escort their monastery's holiest relic to Rome. The mission soon becomes fraught with danger as they trek across a rugged landscape that's been ravaged by years of tribal warfare. I like Tom Holland. I mean, I feel like this is his, like, I did Spider-Man, now I can do something artistic, something Oscar-worthy. And I do like John Bernthal, like I mentioned. So, there's that. Number 7, The Hitman's Bodyguard. You got that?
No, I definitely passed on that.
All right, so Samuel Jackson, Ryan Reynolds, Selma Hayek, Gary Oldman. That's the reason I chose this movie.
The cast kind of got me, and then I read it, and then I was like, no, I can't do this.
Oh, yeah, it looks awful, but I do like the cast.
Ryan Reynolds has failed me enough times on these action thrillers.
But Deadpool.
I hated Deadpool.
No, you didn't. Did you really? You hated Deadpool?
Yeah.
All right, we got to talk about that off air, man. That's it. Anyway, really? You didn't like that? All right. The world's top protection agent is called upon to guard the life of his mortal enemy, one of the world's most notorious hitmen. The relentless bodyguard and manipulative assassin have been on the opposite end of the bullet for years.
Born a hell, man.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Samuel Jackson, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, right.
I like it. Number 6, Gotti.
I put Gotti on my list, but it's my number 10, so let's talk about it right now.
Yeah. John Travolta.
Are you worried that this seems like a Lifetime movie about John Gotti?
Absolutely.
Or if you have one... Like, what is the difference between this and the Brittany Murphy story?
All I can think about when I saw John Travolta was playing John Gotti was John Travolta when he played Robert Shapiro in the O.J. People vs. O.J.
And now that you said that, all I think of is David Schwimmer saying the word juice over and over again.
Juice!
To the point that it became creepy and off-putting.
And then, you know, he threw in the Uncle Juice, and then it's just...
Uncle Juice, all that was creepy.
Yeah. First off, I will say I do love anything surrounding the mob underworld. Big fan of stuff like that. I think it's cool. Obviously, you know, mob movies are great. So it interests me, and I'm not gonna say I'm a fan of John Gotti, but I'm like, I followed the Genovese crime family stories for years.
Now, one of the young John Gotti, grandson, nephew, son, I can't keep track of who's who. Freshman at my high school on the football team, when I'm a senior on the football team.
Yeah.
Kid was tough as nails and hilarious and helped them get to what I believe was an undefeated season.
Hey.
Freshman.
All right.
Linebacker. I think he played with like a broken hand in the final final game.
I like this guy already.
And he deserves, I don't know what he deserves, but I really liked him when he was 14.
Okay.
And I hope that this doesn't besmirch his legacy.
I met the grandson, one of the grandsons from the reality show.
Oh, I forgot about that reality show. I was behind, when I went to get my driver's permit, I was behind Carmine on the
DMV. He's the middle one.
I think Carmine.
I ran into the youngest one, but he's the biggest in terms of size. You could see him from space because he drives a Hummer that has the Yankee colors on it. It's painted the Yankee colors.
Yeah.
So that's my... Ran into him at a Walmart, of all places. So it's like 10 o'clock at night.
Glad to swap John Gotti stories in the pod with you. All right. So Gotti's my number 10. All Fun right. Mom Dinner is my number 9.
Left it off. Go ahead.
Yeah. Toni Collette, lover.
Oh, I do like
Katie Asselton, lover. Molly Shannon, lover. But it's basically just Bad Moms, which
did
was...
Did you see Bad Moms?
Yeah, it was watchable.
Okay, because I've got it on the old...
It was... Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but it was watchable.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of, like, some unwatchable movies that I've seen. Like, this was not one of them.
All right.
It was just bad.
I'll give it a shot bad. On a Sunday afternoon.
Number 8, Ingrid Goes West.
I've got that.
Okay, number 7, Cage Dive.
No, you
I kind of owned the area last year for my birthday. I saw The Shallows with a group of people who did not want to see The Shallows. got a lot of texts this year, like, are we going to see 47 Meters Down with Mandy Moore for your birthday? Cage Dive. No actors that you would know. No director that you would know, I don't think. People are looking, they're in a cage, and they're going to look at great white sharks. Not dissimilar from 47 Meters Down. And what happens is, I guess the cage melts away in the water or breaks, and now they're just sitting in the water with no boat and just a bunch of great whites.
So they should call it Dive.
Sounds like a good time.
Sounds like there's no cage.
And then I have Kidnap with Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Now let me tell you why I have it so much higher than yours.
Because
did you see The Call?
I did not.
Okay, The Call, when we talk about watchable movies,
that's the
Call
movie
was
with,
an enjoyable movie.
Kim Basinger, right?
No, The Call is more recent. It's Halle Berry. She is...
Oh, yeah,
she works
at
the 911 thing. She gets
right.
the 911 call from some kid, probably Chloe Grace Moretz or Abigail Breslin or someone that is recognizable.
A Fanning.
Could have been a Fanning. Easily could have been a Fanning. So the girl calls, like, this guy in my house, he's trying to kidnap me. He's going to kill me. Right? So...
Is this part 2?
The call was really... It was actually exciting. So Halle Berry makes the mistake of the girl hangs up. Halle Berry calls back. This girl's hiding in the house.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the phone starts ringing and she gets nabbed right away.
Dum-dum.
So then this same killer steals some other girl and she gets the 911 call and then somehow...
This is Halle Berry's lucky night.
Recognizes, like, years later, this is the same guy.
Oh,
that
years later.
All the time. So that she makes it her mission to chase him down. She leaves. She's like, she just like leaves her post. I hope she wasn't getting paid hourly because she's
probably
not going to get a check cut.
No,
She's going to come out of her paycheck. And chases this guy down.
That's a long lunch.
And like finds him like in his bunker at the end. Like it, and it gets weird at the end too. It was delightful. And
who plays the bad guy?
Yeah, who cares?
All right.
I couldn't remember which famous girl played the one who got kidnapped. I'm supposed to remember who plays the bad guy. I think it was worthy of being the sixth. I'm telling you, The Call, I'm not going to say go out of your way to watch it, but if you're sitting there and you're like, I have nothing to watch, and The Call is already on the home screen of my Netflix or whatever your Amazon you use, you could spend your hour.
The only reason I had it, at number 10 was because it just seemed like a movie I've seen before.
Yeah, you probably have. It was Abigail Breslin.
Okay. Was that your...
That was
your...
six.
Right,
your five.
So my number five?
Yeah.
Wind River.
Okay, I got that. I don't know where I have it. Let me see.
Because one thing that, you know...
I also have it 5.
All right, let's talk about that. All right. I'm in on Jeremy Renner. We were talking about this
earlier. I'm in on Elizabeth Olsen.
Yes, who's in another movie that's coming up. But yeah. Anyway. It's about an FBI agent that teams up with a veteran game tracker to investigate a murder that occurred on a Native American reservation.
Seems just as pretentious as I want from a Jeremy Renner movie.
But the cast is...
I'll watch him. I'll give him a chance.
I mean, who's not watching Elizabeth Olsen at this point?
Yeah, I'm in on Elizabeth Olsen, yeah. So we got there. So my 5 is the same, so back to you for 4.
Lemon?
I left Lemon off, ultimately. But it's.
I'm in on Brett Gelman, man. I think I'm buying low on Brett Gelman.
That's fair. It certainly had an interesting plot line. It's something that I would probably watch alone and cackle at.
Right. So it says after Isaac's blind girlfriend walks out on him, his life goes into free fall, and he directs an unhinged staging of Chekhov's The Seagull. Attends the Passover Seder from hell and attempts to woo a new flame. You know what it kind of... It feels like one of those... I forgot who directed A Serious Man. It's got that feel.
The Coen Brothers direct A Serious Man? Or am I thinking of The Solitary Man? They don't do
that. Maybe. It just got... It has that feel to it. Like, it's just out there enough that it could be entertaining. What's your number 4?
God, that's so funny. The Seagull. What a ridiculous thing. My 4 is Crown Heights.
I left it off.
You left it off. Okay. Yeah. So this true story about a guy wrongly convicted of murder in 82. It goes through the institutions that keep people getting wrongly convicted, the poor people down,
it's interesting. Black people. I'll tell you why I left it off.
Why?
I don't really feel like watching Nnamdi Asomugha.
I'm kind of in on Nnamdi Asomugha.
I don't know, man.
If he
You think Kerry Washington's out here giving them lessons?
Is Kerry Washington in that movie?
No, that's his wife.
He's married to Kerry Washington? Yeah. A scandal?
Yeah. That's why he was like, he didn't worry about retiring. He's like, all right, she's good. She'll be in Django.
Just ruined Nnamdi Asomugha for me. ruined Kerry Washington for me. Just the way, the same
you
way
like Django?
That Dave Franco ruined Alison Brie for me.
How did he ruin Alison Brie?
They're married. And I found out, and it broke my heart.
But then, you could just watch Glow. Alison Brie is right there.
Yeah, but I'm like less interested in watching it, knowing that she's a married woman.
That's a good point.
So I have Crown Heights. You're number 3.
Ingrid Goes West.
All right, Aubrey Plaza, Elizabeth Olsen.
In.
August? You're on the list. That's all you needed.
And Baby Ice Cube. O'Shea Jackson Jr.
I don't know if I need him. I think he should have won off.
In a comedy, though?
I think he should have won off. Just, I think that he should have just played his father that one time.
And then just quit.
And then, like, 10 years later, play, like, a parody version of his father in, like, the way Brando played in the Freshman with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that should have been it. It should have been his 2 roles.
You have it higher, or?
No, I already have
it. Oh, yeah. All right, so... following the death of her mother in the series.
Yeah, this is boring. She stalks a girl on Instagram because her
mom died. Aubrey Plaza, Elizabeth Olsen, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, that's about it. That's good for me. I had Logan Lucky, number 3. Steven Soderbergh directed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Channing Tatum, Adam Driver. They're stealing from NASCAR. It's weird. Fine. Number 3.
You're and Katie Holmes and Seth MacFarlane, by the way.
Yeah, all right. That's not really selling anything. You're number 2.
Detroit.
My number 2 as well.
I am all in on John Boyega.
I'll tell you what, I'm kind of out on Catherine Bigelow.
I'm not even sure who that is.
The girl who directed The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty.
Ooh.
Well, I like those movies. For me.
But,
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, this is a serious topic, so.
It's true. But I
put it number 2. What am I gonna say?
Who better than John Boyega,
I think? I feel weird about watching John Boyega in, 1967 and seeing how he fits in.
Well,
I'm used to him in Star Wars.
That's true. I'm interested.
All right, so that's also my number 2.
I think we have different number 1s.
I would imagine so.
The Dark Tower.
Yeah, out. Do your spiel so I can go.
It's based on a book. Yeah. Matthew McConaughey is not being Matthew McConaughey, which is cool. And Idris Elba's in it, and I will watch anything that he's in.
Anything. He's in some crap, but...
Stringer Bell? If he's in a movie, I'm watching it.
You're kind of right. All right, I have a surprise winner, Brave New Jersey.
What?
Brave New Jersey.
We're not supposed to make out movies when you do this.
Starring Anna Camp.
Who's that?
The blonde girl from Pitch Perfect.
The blonde girl?
Yeah.
She's Rebel Wilson?
No. The skinny one. Like, her and Brittany Snow are, like, the main ones that Kendrick infiltrates.
Yeah.
She's in a bunch of stuff, but that's the first thing that came to my mind, so okay. She's where I'm at.
By the way, they're making a third Pitch Perfect movie.
Yeah, that doesn't look like it's going to go well. Pitch Perfect 2 was pretty good.
Was it? I haven't seen it.
Like, it's funny. Like, the first one is actually, like, a secretly good movie.
The first one is very good.
And then the second one is kind of like, well, we made a good movie, so now we'll just hang over to it. And
now they've Hangover 3'd it.
That's about it. But Anna Camp's in it. Tony Hale in a supporting role, which I'm excited for. But it had probably the most brilliant plot I've ever heard of, like some crappy movie. It is, these people are living in New Jersey in 1938 when they hear Orson Welles' The War of the Worlds for the first time.
How did I miss this?
And all of those, like, apocryphal stories about how people heard this and thought it was real news, the entire town, apparently, or that entire little block, thinks that this is really happening and everybody is reacting. It seems to me like it's got like a real Shaun of the Dead type situation going on of how people would really react if this happens. And I feel like it's ripe for comedy. I wish that they kind of went all in on it, or that Mike Judge did this and it was his Idiocracy of this decade.
Idiocracy. Underrated. Yeah. Super underrated.
We'll talk about
underrated.
It in a couple weeks when we talk about the best 25 movies of the
millennium. Yeah.
This has been the NFL Draft Podcast.
Yeah, it has. You can follow us on Twitter at NFL Draft Podcast.
Email us draftpodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.